Alan, they do say defence wins matches. Defence certainly won that one.
Yeah, 100%. You know, there's a lot of things come when I was at Swinton, you know, and I thought we had that desire there, and this group of lads have got it again, and there's a lot of people question, you know, and a soft culture, you know, how can you question that culture there today? That was we spoke at half time about, and it might sound a little bit far fetched this, but we said, you know, when your grandparents go to war and things, and they have to dig in and they have to do things, and it costs them lives. I know this isn't costing lives, but there's thousands of people there watching you, and you're on Brinker doing something in a group's not done before, and that's very similar to them situations. And you know what I honestly lost for words. I just thought they showed that how much it means to them play for this club.
6-2 is a precarious lead in any game. Up the slope of Batley, it's a particularly precarious lead.
Yeah. When opportunity comes, and you know, without sounding disrespectful to Batley, I saw them run off and I heard some comments what they said, and I addressed my players with it. They thought they'd won the game just because it was 6-2, you know, going uphill. And we'd spoke all week about we could feel as though there was more points in us going uphill than downhill. Obviously, we lost toss. We didn't want to do that situation, but we got what situation we was given, and we didn't bat an eyelid. I didn't want us panic going down the hill to get points on board. I just wanted us to complete high, and more than anything, we took a lot of gas out of them in the first half, so we knew their energy levels wouldn't be the same coming down the hill. We get an opportunity for a kick, but we decide, well, Gilly looks at me and he's right, he's 4 points enough. No, it's not here. So we run it, we got a try on the back of that. So, you know, people might question that when it's coming down near the end at 2 points, but we felt as though that wasn't enough. So, you know, that's the decision we went, and it worked for us.
You made a few errors in the second half, a couple of drop balls coming out of your own end, for example, which meant you had to do even more tackling on your goal line. Some heroic efforts from individuals and defence at times.
Oh, tremendous. My back line. Every player in the back line just works so hard. Normally the floor of our team, I thought there was the engine room today with what they had to do. Mike Butt, wow, under them spirals. Matt Fleming, his reads on D, Ince, his carries, you know, Zach Burns, the raw, you know, he busted their fullback with a perfectly timed, great tackle, proper old school rugby league tackle. And the effort was unbelievable. And we knew we had two today because, you know, you look, they beat Sheffield, they beat Fev, they beat York, they beat all the teams around us here, Bradford, and, you know, we knew how difficult it would be. And just proud, so proud of them all.
You told me last week that you felt you were going into 5 grand finals in the remaining fixtures in the regular season. Well, that's one, and you've won it. Another one next week, isn't it, against York?
Even tougher. You know, they're putting scores on everybody. And we, you know, because we clipped Batley this week, they played York and very impressed with them. And speaking to Mocco, the Batley coach, said the best team he's played. And you know, I thought they were good when we played them away, but we were good. You know, but we've just spoken there. You know, we're going to enjoy this today more than anything. Mike Fozzie gets married tomorrow, so we're having Tuesday off. I think it's right for the players. We said if we win, we're going to have Tuesday off, and just come in on Thursday fresh and just focus on York. You know, enjoy. You know, enjoy the win, enjoy Fozzie's wedding, but more than anything, focus on this, because I just feel, you know, I'm not counting my chickens, but I feel if we can get a win next week, you know, you've near enough 1 foot in there.
Anyone coming back for you next week?
Yeah, Shane Grady will be available. Not sure about Lloyd Roby. So definitely one, possible two.
You set up the players towards the end, Alan, or after the game to get the applause from the fans, and I've seen you cheering the fans up with about 5 minutes to go. Talks through getting that set up, really. You wanted to get the players the reward, if you like, or the accolades that they deserved.
Yeah, I've got a real strong connection with the fans of Widnes now, and I really appreciate them. I've come from a club where, no disrespects to them, there's not a lot of numbers, but they're very passionate, and I've always had that rapport with them. And I've come here now, and I want to build this. I want to grow it. You know, nearly, you know, half the shed though. You know, and you've got 3-4 year olds, 70 year olds. You know, the guy in the crowd, 60 birthday. Thanks, you've made me birthday. And, but they sing my name, and I'm proud of that. I'm absolutely 10 foot tall when they do that. You know, it's such a lovely gesture. But I don't want to take away from what these guys are doing, and that's why I said to the boys, please line up for me. They get a bit embarrassed by it, but no, it's important they get the accolades, because, you know, I work my socks off, as you all know, but they work their socks off more than anybody, and it's just a pleasure to coach Widnes, but a pleasure to coach this group of men.
Unlucky for some, it's episode 13 of the Widnes Rugby Chat podcast in 2024 with myself, James Gordon, and joined as ever by Mike Parsons. And we're chatting off the back of a hard fought 12-8 win over Batley. Probably it would have been a good win or a important win in any season, but certainly in the context of this one, a particularly important one, Mike.
Oh yeah, absolutely pivotal and fantastic to get over the line. You know, there was a big following that come to Batley, probably one of the most well-supported away games Widnes have had this season, and the crowd really got behind the lads. I think we touched upon it last week, what you'd rather do first, go up the hill or down the hill. To make things a little bit more difficult, we lost the toss, didn't we? I thought the first half, you know, the forwards was by far the more dominant forward pack. I think we was making good metres. If anything, at the time, you could say some of the kicks was conservative early doors, but I think afterwards in Alan's interview, he, you know, I think that was part of the plan of, you know, put them where you want them and defend and complete well. That was obviously priority, which links to your point last week, I think, James, nicely, where it wasn't about panicking going down the hill first and feeling like you've got to be X amount in front. I think the team did really well not to fall into that trap, and I think that trademark cross-field kick to Rodri Lloyd, where it bounced backwards and Joe Lyons scooped it up to score, put 6-0 in front, and then right on half-time, obviously, they got a penalty goal after failing to break us down. I thought we looked really solid. I thought Liam Bence was harshly done to for not being on the nominations of four. I totally get why the outside backs were all nominated. I mean, there was fantastic out of yardage once, wasn't they? And the two wingers especially, again, was faultless under the high ball. The second half, I thought that was the best spell of the game. The first 20 minutes, I thought we really jetted off up the hill. I thought we had a bit more like intensity about us going forward. And, you know, we had that small break led by Tom Gilmore on the short side, which seen Ryan Ince go down the touchline, which was a warning sign for an almost carbon copy break. About 5 minutes later, where obviously Jack Owens spotted that they were short on numbers, and we had the 3-on-2 and a great face ball to Wincy, and he skirted down the touchline and a lovely little weighted kick on the inside, and Jack Owens seemed to have acres of space to pick it up and score. And then I thought the last 15 minutes, it was a bit nervy, wasn't it? I think a couple of errors by the forwards, Dan Murray, and obviously that drop ball from Jack Owens, which I think it come down with snow on that one. And he obviously dropped the ball. And I think the one disappointing part of the afternoon, which I don't think Alan mentioned in the post-match interview, and nor should he, for the performance we put in and the work ethic and the defensive display that we put on. But it's probably the disappointing part of the game was that, you know, their try, Niall Flynn just barging over. I think Ryan Lannan and Liam Kirk almost got in each other's way, and he just had enough momentum to go over. And I think, like I say, you know, the last 10 minutes, it was a bit nervy. But I've got to be honest, although they had field position, which you'd expect going down the hill, I don't think we looked like we was hanging on at all. We looked in control of the situation. We defended very well, numbered up on Nicks and Putt very well, and got over the line to what I think will prove a pivotal win, I think.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the topic last week, because when Alan Coleman said it in the post-match interview, I was thinking, oh, maybe I do know what I'm talking about a little bit, or maybe he was deliberately saying it because he'd listened to the podcast and he'd actually taken it as a, you know, he'd taken it as inspiration. But yeah, I think Widnes made a lot of errors at the start of the second half, which didn't help them. There was a few knock-ons, a few untidy passes. I think Joe Lyons a couple of times from dummy half. Even Matty Fozard had one from dummy half where probably not didn't pass it in the way that they would have expected to. The big tackle by Bardsley Rowe on Butterworth, obviously you never like seeing a player get injured, but there was nothing wrong with the tackle. I know it got put on report. It'll be interesting to see what whether anything comes of that. I don't think it will.
But that disrupted Batley a little bit because they had to put Walshaw basically in the set. Well, he was practically on the wing at one point. They had to put him in the outside backs. And I did think that at times they almost looked like they weren't playing with centres Batley. So like Nixon put, I thought Matt Fleming did a great job on him. But I think if you were Batley looking at that, you'd think, well, hang on a second, Putt was playing in the second row. So why is Fleming being able to do a job on him? And it was just because they weren't getting the ball. I don't think the centre, Mitsias, wasn't offering them a great deal. And that meant that Fleming knew he could come in and help Ryan Lannan with Nixon Putt, knowing that they're not going to get the ball shifted out. We talked a little bit on commentary about whether Widnes ought to have tried maybe 40-20s in the first half. I suppose it's always an easy observation to make when the pitch is on the small side and you're on the you're playing downhill. But like you say, Widnes managed the game pretty well. And to be honest, I can't imagine that. I haven't looked at this, and maybe if anyone from Batley is listening, but I'd imagine that. Having a four, there can't be many teams who've won away at Batley having only held a 4-point lead at half time, because usually they are able to, certainly in recent years, usually they are able to turn it around. Man of the match, I thought Fleming was man of the match. I think he got it anyway, didn't he? From the club. A good, solid win for Widnes. And Alan Coleman was obviously pleased with it. I think he said he felt that as they were coming off at half time, he felt like Batley were happy to go off 6-2 down. And I think he wasn't happy with a couple of the comments that he heard when he was coming off, and he sort of used that as motivation in the second half. Which is good, and that was partly why I asked him at the end about the way he presented the players to the fans, which I thought was a nice touch. I think more fans probably were. It's just a shame it was United Liverpool, wasn't it? Because I think maybe a few more fans would have travelled if it hadn't have been. But yeah, so we're a step closer to the end of the season, and next week or this week it is York at home. Another big game, another important game. In my opinion, the home defeat to York last season was probably where Widnes' playoff bid last season was derailed. Not sure what your thoughts are. I don't think I did the game. I think I'd got... I mean, I don't often miss matches, to be honest, but BBC had sent me to Leeds to do Leeds-Warrington. I think Widnes were winning that game against York, but I think that was probably the result that really derailed Widnes' playoff bid last year. So I'm not saying that'll happen this year. It'd take a lot more to derail it this year, but it's clearly another big game, Mike.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's ironic, actually, because I don't think it'll be our downfall of the playoffs, win or lose, but I think it'll be York's. I think it's a pivotal game for them. I think they've got everything on the line on Sunday. I mean, of course, you know, we want to finish as high as possible. But it's funny you should mention that York came last year, because I think we was always up against it. And I think you mentioned it a few weeks ago. And looking back, you are probably right. It was, if you had to put a pinpoint on it of when it was probably more or less over, it was probably round about then. But that game, I remember being downstairs in the concourse, and I thought we was doing okay. And I was just like, if we could go up one or two gears here, you know, I think we'll be all right. We'll go on and win this. You know, the game's there for the taking. I got back downstairs with my pint, sat down, and I think we seen try by York from the kickoff. I think 7 minutes had gone in the second half, and I think we was 16 points behind, something like that, out of nothing. So
the moral of that story is don't drink. it's going to be an important game. A couple of things before we move on with the rest of the podcast. So I think we've said already, Mike, that we are going to continue in the off season. We probably won't do weekly, but we'll probably do fortnightly. So we're going to try and do A few throwback type ones. We're going to get some players on, past players for interviews and whatnot. And with that theme in mind, and with Widnes playing York this weekend, I spoke to Andrew Henderson earlier this year. He is the director of rugby at York. He was the coach. His last game as coach was against Widnes in the reverse fixture. And I spoke to him about his brief stint at Widnes that most people have probably forgotten about ahead of the 2004 Super League season, where he played for Widnes in Australia in the Sevens, in the Sydney Sevens that was over there. I've always wanted to ask him about it, so I took the opportunity to do so, and here's what he had to say.
I want to cast your mind about 20 years when you had a little bit of the trial at Widnes. I think it's 20 years since it was the Sydney Sevens or something like that.
Yeah, it was 2004.
I've actually got a signed shirt in my office from the tour in Australia. Just because that was you'd not played in the British game before that, had you?
No, I had done. So I'd had a see you, Dano. Good to see you, brother. Take care, mate. I'd done a season at Salford in 2001, but played in their Alliance team. Couldn't, because Malcolm never got injured, so I couldn't get a game. And then I went and joined Barrow for two seasons. It was in the Northern Ford Premiership.
Then. Oh, so you went so to, and did, then you went back to Barrow after as well, didn't you?
Yeah, so I did 2 years at Barrow, and it was off the back of that. I was literally going back to Australia for my off-season, and I got a phone call from, I think it was Tom Fleet was the director at the time, rang me up and said, oh, because I think they'd signed Jason Deeth from Manly, and then that deal, he must have pulled the pin last minute or something. So they obviously thought, shit, we need another halfback hooker type player. And then they Tom Fleet, one of the directors, he rang me. It was the day I was flying back to Australia, and I said, well, fuck, I've got to go to the airport. Like, and back then, you could just email something over. Yeah. And I said, I'm nowhere near a fax machine to get a fax contract through or anything like that. And then it was him that said, well, listen, we're actually coming out for our pre-season in January. Might work better for you if you want to join up with us then. You can get a look at us and get a feel. We can get a look at you, and then we can see how we go from there. I thought, perfect, great. So I just trained with the club while I was back home for 6 weeks, whatever, and then joined the squad in January up in Fosterville based. Did the month there training. Obviously, we did the World Sevens. I played in that. Played West Tigers in a friendly. But I had to play at hooker because Millard was injured. Yep. So I played the full. So originally, they were looking at trying to sign me as a half, but I never actually played at half that game. I played the full game. I got offered a contract, but it wasn't enough for me to justify going back. It's funny enough, off the back of that, I ended up signing them for the Tigers.
Because
they offered me money too.
It was in Australia, not
correct, Widnes. Correct, and I'm already there, exactly. And it was like, because I think what both clubs probably realised is, mate, we're now in February.
Yeah, you're not going to get anyone
else. He needs a freaking club. Yeah, he's going to come down. Widnes tried to offer me the cheap deal, and I just said, well, I'm not. I was getting paid more at Barrow. I was a Super League. Like, don't take the pick. Like, I'm not saying I was worth loads of money. I just felt
it's got to be
a little bit. Come on. So they were a bit cheeky, I felt. But then obviously the Tigers offered me a kind of shit deal too, because they knew my position. But I just said, well, I might as well stay here.
It's always a weird one, because obviously from
Widnes, I was gutted in a way, because I was looking forward to going to Widnes.
Because I suppose if you'd have come, if maybe you'd have signed, if it hadn't have happened in Australia, it had happened if you were still in England, if you know what I mean. If you'd have gone before you'd flown back home,
yes,
and you're still in England, I suppose your decision would have been a lot harder, because you would have been like, well, I'm already in England, so if they've offered me a deal,
correct,
I might have stayed.
Yeah. I know you, mate.
Because it's always a weird one, because obviously you know your name's always linked to Widnes, but like the Widnes fans never seen you play, because obviously you played the trial stuff was over in Australia, it was always a bit of like a what if.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, Widnes people will then see you do so well for Carson.
Yeah, I know.
And it's like, they know your name is associated there, but they never quite got to see me.
I know. And it's funny, because I was one of those ones, I was generally gutted, really. I was really gutted by it, because I actually thought, you know, I knew I'd trained well, I knew I'd performed well enough, I thought, you know, and then I got offered a contract and it just wasn't where it needed to be, and I was like, far out.
What's it like when you do that, though? You know, like when you go into, and obviously there's obviously an established squad there.
Yeah,
you're going in as a trialist. What's it like that?
Yeah, it can be quite daunting for a lot of people. I mean, I'm just fortunate enough. I probably had a a bit of confidence about me, not arrogance, but confidence in terms of comfortable speaking with people, dealing with people. Even at a young age, I would have only been, 23 then or something, you know, but I felt confident enough to mix with people. And to be fair, yeah, there were some good lads in that witness group, Dion Bird and that, and there were some good guys that really kind of made me feel welcome, so I didn't ever feel like that they weren't accepting of me. And I think it's like anything, once they see you trained and how you crack, having a crack and that, they get that respect, you know, like, oh, he's having a crack here, mate. Actually, fuck yeah, he's looking alright at training, he's having a go. Like, it's like anything, you've got to earn their respect. So you don't walk in carrying on, you just come in, make sure you're polite, and just let your trainer do the talking, mate. And then obviously once I started playing in the sevens, I thought I had a decent sevens tour there, and then obviously went, had my game after the West Tigers. I played the full 80 that day, you know, whatever heat it was, you know what I mean? And like, I think a lot of players respected the fact that, you know, fair play to him, mate, like, he's done that, he's only had a month's training with us, like, you know what I mean? So yeah.
Twenty odd years it is now since Andrew Henderson pulled on a Widnes shirt, albeit I would imagine 95% of us, if not more, didn't see it. You're probably more of a rugby league thing than a Widnes thing, Mike, but wouldn't it be great if Widnes could have a pre-season tour to Australia these days?
Well, they just, I mean, to get the plane going, I think it'd take a hell of a whip round like, but it would be fantastic nonetheless.
We could do an on-location podcast. I'd be bang up for that.
What's that, sorry, mate?
We could do an on-location podcast, couldn't we? We'd be bang up for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, thanks. Andrew Henson's always good to speak to be fair. With all due respect to him, hopefully he's not too happy after Sunday when York visit. We've had a few people asking us to do this, so Mike's going to get his abacus out, and we're going to do the run-ins for the playoff chasing teams. Well, I don't know if we're going to do predictions. We'll see how we get on. But every team's got four games left. And whereas perhaps maybe 6 weeks ago, you felt that maybe the top three were almost untouchable to a point, but Toulouse and Sheffield certainly in Sheffield's case, have fallen away to an extent where now pretty much all positions from second onwards are open and are up for grabs. Widnes are only 2 points behind Toulouse at the moment. I think going down, are you thinking, Mike, the same as me, that it's basically six from seven now? Batley and Doncaster just fallen away in recent weeks. So you can't really see them getting enough points on the board to get in.
No, I think it was make or break for Batley this week. Unfortunately, they come up short. So I think unfortunately for them, I think that's the end of the line. And I think it's down to York to make up the ground. I mean, before we go through these fixtures, I think the running that they've got left, Sheffield, the recent results of Sheffield, the recent news of Mark Aston, I think if they're going to catch somebody at the finishing line, York, I think it'll be Sheffield.
Yeah, I think for those who aren't aware, the Sheffield coach, Mark Aston, and his assistant have been suspended by the club pending investigation, which the club has issued an update, albeit an update that doesn't really update you, that they are waiting for an operational rules tribunal. I'm led to believe it is in relation to playing players in breaching concussion protocols. Basically, I'm led to believe that it's something in connection with that. And since I think they got a narrow win, did get a narrow win over Doncaster Sheffield, but other than that, they've been on a little bit of a run of defeats, and they've tumbled from looking comfortable in the top three to now clinging on to a playoff place. Looking at the fixtures, so we're going to look at Toulouse, Bradford, Widnes, obviously Featherstone, Sheffield and York. Of those six teams, five of them have got two at home and two away. And the only team that doesn't is York, who've actually got three away games, and three tough away games at that. They're at Widnes, of course, this week, and then they've got Wakefield away, Sheffield away, which, as you say, Mike, might be the game, perhaps, that decides the sixth spot, and then Featherstone at home. That's York's running, so it's looking... You're writing off the Wakefield one. They're the only team, by the way, in the playoff race that plays Wakefield in these last four games. So it's in their own hands, but it's looking tough for York.
Yeah, it is definitely. I think I touched on upon it earlier. I think this game is, I mean, it's massive for us, but I think there's more on the line for York in terms of, I think if they beat us, I think right at the end of their run, they've got Featherstone as well. I think if they get beat by us, you've got to assume that they're going to get beat by Wakefield. If them two results was locked in, I would worry whether they could go and get anything from Featherstone. However, on the flip side, if they manage to get over the line against us, I think they go into that Featherstone game all guns blazing and maybe pinch the result.
Well, I mean, like you say, if Widnes were to beat York this weekend, then Widnes would be 5 points ahead of York with three games left. And when you consider that one of those York games is Wakefield, as you say, you're probably thinking that the most points York could get is 28. So effectively, if we're making it as simple and as straightforward as that, if Widnes win this weekend, basically in the playoffs, that's almost the reality of the situation at this point, you know, barring a miracle. And it would be a miracle, wouldn't it, if, you know, Wakefield have rolled everybody over this season. It'd be a huge upset if York were to win there. So we don't need to go through the rest of the night. We just decided it's all on this Sunday. If Widnes win, they're in the playoffs. That's it. Right, well, that saves a lot of time. Toulouse, they've got 29 points. They have four games. Barrow away, Halifax at home, Widnes away, and Batley at home. The next two games of it are interesting because they've got Barrow and Halifax, who are both desperate for points to stay away from the bottom. I would imagine Barrow away will be a tricky one, but they have slipped up at home this season to lose a few times, and Halifax just maybe starting to pick up a little bit. Might fancy knocking them off a little bit there.
I've got to be honest, James. I think it's going to be a real scramble for these top four places. And three of the four places. Sorry, ignore Wakefield. I think there's going to be a hell of a scramble. And I'll be honest, James, I'm more confident of beating Toulouse at home than York on Sunday. Not saying that we're not going to beat York on Sunday, but Toulouse have it in their makeup. Certainly travelling away from home as well, where they've had some, you know, sketchy results over the season. Results where you flick on teletext on BBC BBC results page and you go, where on earth has that result come from after, you know, winning consecutive games? So yeah, I don't think it's guaranteed that Toulouse will finish second.
Bradford have snuck up to third. They've got 28 points, so they're a point behind Toulouse and a point ahead of Widnes. I think Bradford have probably arguably got the best running out of anyone. They've got Sheffield away, Batley at home, Halifax away, Swinton at home. I suppose, like we did with Toulouse, you could maybe point at them to the last two games, Halifax and Swinton, as being games against teams who are probably going to need a result in them games to come away. Widnes' last four, York at home, Doncaster away, Toulouse at home, Barrow away. And, you know, Barrow away actually is looking like that'll be a tough one, because Barrow are probably almost certainly going to need a result in that game on the last day. I think I mentioned this last week or the week before, but I had a conversation with Alan Coleman where I said he was worried about Barrow away being the last game. And I think the point I said to him at the time was, I find it hard to see how Widnes' playoff chances are going to be hinged on that last game, because I just can't see how Widnes won't have it boxed off by that game. I mean, it might have a say on whether you're at home, I guess, in the playoffs. It might have an impact on whether you're top four or not. But certainly, I don't think we're going to be going to Barrow on the last day of the season worrying about whether Widnes are going to be in the playoffs.
No, not at all. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I think how we're coming into form and we're bubbling along really nicely. You know, we're looking a really battle-hardened team now. I think it'd be more of a case around that time where it may be a game where you could finish third, you could finish fourth, which obviously, you know, gets you a home tie. I think that's monumental. I think Alan will want that. He'll want, you know, the North Stand rocking for one opportunity at least at home. Then if we progress, happy days. I really think we're at that point now where it's not looking at the, you know, the playoff places, it's where you want to finish. And it's such a nice position to be in. It we've kind of forgotten what it feels like, and it's, I think anybody would have snapped your hand off for a playoff spot wherever it was. And the fact that we're talking here now with a good few games left, and it's actually the top four's on, the top three's on, potentially the top two, depending on other results, you know, it is fantastic. And I think behind closed doors, I think they will really fancy themselves to get that top four spot. And I think that Barrow game, it could be very important for both teams.
So carrying on, Featherstone have got 26. That's 1 point fewer than Widnes at the moment. They've got Swinton away, Sheffield at home, Dewsbury at home, York away. Sheffield have got Bradford at home, Featherstone away, York at home, and then Dewsbury away. And then we've already been through York, who have got Widnes, Wakefield, Sheffield away, and then Featherstone at home. I'm going to say, based on... I think if Widnes... I'm a bit loath to do predictions, Mike, but I think Toulouse, Bradford and Widnes will all win three of the last four. I think Widnes will beat Toulouse, but I think maybe the Barrow one might be where they slip up. That's potentially where my head's at the moment. Looking at Featherstone, I can't see... I think they'll win three... I think... I could see Featherstone winning all four of their games, but... Yeah, I think that... I think it might come down, like you say, to that York-Featherstone game. It depends if York might already be done by that stage. I think it's going to come... The two games it's going to hinge on, I think, is going to be Sheffield against York, which is the penultimate round, and then York-Featherstone, which is the final round. I think they're the games that you're looking at when you're predicting could swing either way. What I've said there about Widnes maybe winning three or four, if Widnes can win four out of four, you're almost looking at second place. It's in your... I think Toulouse's points difference is far superior, isn't it? So it's going to be tough to... if you finish level on them, you're going to be below them.
Worth noting as well, James, is I'm just looking here now, and York have got a far superior goal difference to Sheffield above them, so they are only 2 points off.
Yeah, I think I'd plump for York beating Sheffield and Featherstone, which means I think Featherstone will end up on 32. I think Sheffield will only pick up one more win, which would be against Dewsbury on the last game, and then so effectively, based on my predictions, everyone's just going to finish in the order they are now, except maybe York will jump above Sheffield on points difference. That's where I'm going. I think Widnes, I'm basing it on Widnes losing one of the three, probably the Barrow away game, but if Widnes can win that then becomes the difference between finishing fourth or third. I've got Bradford winning three out of four because I'm thinking that maybe Halifax will turn them over. But I'm sure, as is always the case with the Championship, there'll be plenty of twists and turns within it. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking I'm gonna back Bradford to clinch that second spot. I think to lose in third, Widnes in fourth, Featherstone in fifth, and I'm going York in sixth. Now, if we beat York on Sunday, I think we could go four from four. So if we do that, I'll put us third, but fourth, I think. I think this is the big game on Sunday for us, because I think you've got a hungry team coming at you, and some of the results, you know, York have gone to Toulouse and won. The victories of late, they've put a lot of points past teams. You know, they've got Atarigano, who I think outside of Wakefield's one of the best halves in the Championship. He had a great game up at York Stadium before he got taken off, and that almost changed the game a little bit. I think our biggest task is this weekend. I think the difference could be between third and fourth is this weekend.
I think that the only way Widnes finish top three is if they finish above Bradford. I can't see a situation where Widnes finish on more points than Toulouse at the moment. But then if Toulouse lose against Barrow this weekend, it does open up a little bit. Obviously, it's been a long time since Widnes have made the playoffs, so the format is the same as the Super League one. So you're effectively looking at Wakefield atop. So if you finish second, you get the first week off. If you finish third or fourth, you're at home to fifth or sixth, depending on where you are. And then the winners of them go through to play Wakefield and the second place team in the semi-final. So if you were to finish, I'm just trying to think how best it would be. So realistically, if Widnes were to finish third and win their semi-final, you would then travel to the second place team in the semi-finals if you were to get through, which could potentially be Toulouse. If you finish fourth, realistically, you're playing Wakefield, aren't you, in the semi-final, unless the team who finishes sixth upsets the team who finishes third in the very first game. But I suppose whether it's Wakefield or Toulouse or Bradford or whoever who finishes second, I suppose it'd be nice to think about. It's nice to think about the prospect of the season extending itself by, well, 1 week, but 2 weeks, 3 weeks would be absolutely superb.
Oh, 100%. I mean, let's have it right. If anybody at the start of the season was offering this, you snap their hand off. I mean, that's understatement of the year. I mean, to think that your season could be going into October is fantastic. Full credit to Alan, how he's galvanised that team. You know, there was a lot of noise around some of the signings at the start of the season, and you know, rightly or wrongly, you know, they've all come together, and a lot of the signings have paid off. You know, you might butcher Dan Murray's, Rodri Lloyd as well in there. But yeah, I think once you make them playoffs, and I think the cherry on the cake would be that home tie. I don't know about you, James, but it'd be just very interesting for that one-off game at home to see where we're at in terms of a playoff crowd and attendance, how many that would attract. Obviously, the season tickets took a drop off at the end of last year. You know, probably rightly so for a lot of people. You know, certainly not me or you, but, you know, I understand people that, you know, maybe I've lost a bit of interest because of previous years. But all that would get kind of pushed away out the water, and it'd be really nice to see how many would turn out for it.
Yeah, I mean, well, just thinking out loud, what they could do is they could say that if you buy your season ticket before the playoff game, you get the ticket for free or something like that, or you know, a cheaper ticket or something like that, because that'd be a good way of getting people to commit for the following season, you know, straight off the bat. Obviously, I'm not 100% sure how it works in, I don't know whether there's a shared gate and stuff in the playoffs, which might make that complicated. But, I mean, Wakefield are dishing out tickets left, right and centre. So, I presume you must be able to do something with them. But, yeah, it'll all become clear in the next few weeks anyway. And, well, we look forward to at least, well, hopefully, surely there's going to be at least one playoff game involving Widnes this season, which will be the first proper playoff game since the 2014 Super League one, and of course the first Championship one since 2011, which I'm sure finished 38-0 to Barrow, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
That was a long drive. I went on my own, actually. Anyway, got a few talking points this week from people who listened to our talking points last week. I think we did talk about the museum slightly, and I've had a message saying maybe the items could be displayed in the north and south stands to improve the look of the concourses. I guess the only problem with that is the security element of it, because, of course, if it's, with all due respect to people like Mike who drink beer, if they're on display in the concourse, they're at risk of getting damaged potentially. What do you think, Mike?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd like it not to get damaged, that's for sure. I'd like it to be accessible a little bit more. I'd like it to be on show a little bit more. I don't know what that'd look like. Whether it be just like maybe for like, you know, members Mondays to get some of it out and display it in the bridge suite, you know, temporarily, you know, so people can see it, and obviously creates talking points, doesn't it? But it certainly seems locked away, doesn't it? If that makes sense, you know, that door from reception going in, it is locked apart from a match day, you know. So I'd like it to be a bit more accessible.
I've had a few messages on this subject about the coverage of Widnes in the Widnes Weekly News or in the Widnes World, and also noting that there's no real presence for the club around the time. There's no billboards or posters in local businesses, things like that. Now, let me get this straight. Widnes should be on the back page of the Widnes Weekly News every week, period. They're the biggest club in the town by a country mile. The problem is that local newspapers have been decimated, and ultimately all they're doing now is just slinging out whatever they can get their hands on. The reason why the ice hockey gets good coverage is because the ice hockey club are proactive and send reports, interviews, photos straight to the paper that they can put in the paper straight off the bat. Now, whether you think that that's the right way to go about it, that's the reality of the situation. Now, I actually suggested that the club do this about 18 months ago, maybe even a bit longer, and for one reason or another, it didn't come to fruition. But I think that is ultimately the biggest obstacle. I think if Widnes were to start, or if someone was to start sending articles into the Weekly News, and I'm sure the coverage would improve, and the same with the Widnes World as well. I actually had a brief conversation. The Widnes World's owned by the same group that own the Warrington Guardian. I had a brief conversation about contributing to them early this year, but they didn't have the budget to do so. That's the reality of the situation. We've had a discussion, and this is something that's in the plan. I want to try and replicate the sort of newspaper coverage that other clubs get through ourselves, through my own channels, and we might release, you know, some sort of Patreon or something like that to help fund that coverage. I'll never put content behind a paywall because I don't believe in it necessarily, but you know, on the podcast will always be free to listen to. But if we can get to a point where, you know, fans or sponsors or whatever are putting a donation in to help fund the creation of content, then the possibilities are endless with that. And then if we do get to that point, then, I mean, I wouldn't mind, if I could cover my time for doing it, I wouldn't mind distributing content. I wouldn't mind creating content for the Widnes Weekly News at no cost to them, if obviously it can be, you know, funded in other ways. But I think that's just to make that clear to people, because I had a few questions about why there isn't the coverage. It's effectively just a resource thing in local newspapers, and whether you agree with it or not, sadly that is the case. As for billboards, I'm going to suggest Mike could walk around town with like one of them A-boards on you, couldn't you, with next game or something like that. I think you'd be...
I need more than a few pints of beer at the game to do that, James, let me tell you.
what could you have? You could have... What is there in town now? I wonder if you could get one of the local eateries to, you know, they could have the eatery on one side, you know, 2-for-1 on a Tuesday or something, and then on the other side can be Widnes's next game, and you can just walk around ringing a bell or something like that.
Try the burger van opposite Quality Save.
Yeah. I mean, the argument is that the people on social media, or the social media mainly reaches people who are already at matches. I get what you're saying with regards to that, but there's plenty of people who follow the club on social media who don't go to the matches, and trying to get them people back is a thing. Clearly, there's a cost to having billboards around town and signage around town. There's a real cost in terms of printing and getting them produced. There's a labour cost in terms of identifying where they go and actually getting the artwork or whatever it is printed up. But maybe it's something that, maybe not Widnes Vips, but maybe it's something that there needs to be a fan group put together to help try and do these sorts of things that are clearly beyond the club at the moment. I also thought the same about the seats at the stadium. Does there need to be a Friends of the Halton Stadium group set up who volunteer to jet wash the seats at the stadium once a year or something?
No, it's Heritage Week's past, definitely. Like the newspaper articles, I mean, that's more your bag than mine, James. But like I'm glad you've mentioned the presence in the town, because I'm big on that, and there's nothing at all. And I totally get there's a cost thing, but we need part of this year is some of the feel good factors come back. And you know, a lot of that's to do with Alan and obviously the performances on field and a strong season ticket campaign. You know, for me, the club should be a strong part of the community, and going into that town centre, you should have the club advertised in some way. And I'm going to go there. I know it's a Widnes podcast, but you walk into Golden Square Shopping Centre in Warrington, and you know Warrington Wolves play round the corner in Warrington. Now, I know they've got a Super League budget. I know they've got a big money man at the club. But is there anything better that we can do now that we do currently? For me, surely there's got to be low cost ways, you know?
Yeah. I always was an advocate, and I think I talked about this on the podcast probably before COVID now. I don't understand why on the signs when you drive into Widnes, it doesn't say home of Widnes Vikings, world champs 89, something like that. Because
agree.
All due respect to Widnes, they're not going to be world champion at anything else. It's something that you should make a song and dance about. I do remember someone from the council got in touch with me after that podcast, and I forget what the exact conversation was, but for me, that's something that the fans would mobilise and crowdfund. If there was a cost to having, you know, on the Welcome to Halton signs, you've got home on the Widnes ones, obviously, you've got home of Widnes Vikings world champs, or home of Widnes RLFC world champs 89 or something. I think if there was an opportunity to do that and the council said it's going to cost X amount, I'm fairly sure that we would crowdfund that. Like, 100%. When I say we, I mean as a community of Widnes fans. I'm fairly sure that that would happen.
100%. And it's a great way to go about it as well, because it's timeless. You can't erase history. If you did one of the current team or Alan Coleman or whatever, unfortunately, there comes a time where there's a new team next season. Down the line, whereas obviously, you know, like you've just said, World Club Champions, that doesn't come round too often. And once it was there, that it's there forever.
There is still a poster up on, it's along the bypass opposite sort of the back of the ice rink. And it's got like Adam Wharton and Kyle Amore on, you know, in last season's kit or whatever. But, you know, it's just a poster. It says Widnes Vikings. It's got five people, and it doesn't really tell you anything useful or any information like. But, we were talking about it last week, weren't we? There's barely any signage at the actual ground itself. So I mean, you're already fighting a losing battle if you can't even signpost people at the ground, let alone anywhere else.
Have you how many times have you drove past James to see the match?
I haven't been actually, but genuinely though, I do feel like we're in this day and age, aren't we now, where crowdfunding campaigns and things like that. You know, people know that the councils haven't got any money. No one's got any money. But I feel like when there's things like that, I think if there's a little bit of a two-way conversation between, right, let's say we've had the idea that you want a sign at the ground or you want the Welcome to Widnes Road signs. If there's a conversation that happens between whoever, you know, whether it's me who has the conversation or whether it's the club who has the conversation, and someone comes down to you and says, right, if you raise £10,000, we're going to do that. I think you're at the point where we're in the day and age where people as a collective mobilise and make things like this happen. And that's my, you know, that's my sort of position on it anyway. I think it's tough. You know, you could argue that the club ought to do certain things because ultimately the club is a business and they, you know, every business has to market themselves. Just because they're a rugby club doesn't mean that they should automatically get customers. You know, every business in the world has to advertise, even the biggest ones. And so I think you can say to the club, well, they ought to do something, but if they're not in the position to, or if they're not willing to, at least try and facilitate other people doing it for you. That's my position on it anyway. So, yeah.
No, I agree, James. I do agree. Certainly the crowdfunding, I'd pay my way. I would. You are right. And if I think, obviously, it'd have to be the right idea and, you know, yeah, the right location and this, that and the other. But if it was bang on and it whetted people's appetite, I think you're right. You know, there would be a contribution. A lot of people in this town do still care.
Yeah, because I think there's, like you say, if you do the right thing, then there's a legacy to it. You know, if you do the Welcome to Widnes Road sign, it's going to be there for 10 years. If it costs 10 grand, I mean, and I'm plucking that figure out of the air, if it costs 10 grand over 10 years, is that worth 10 grand 100%? Is that going to generate 10 grand back? You know, you look at in your lifetime, if you're a fan of 40 years, right, you'll spend 10 grand easy at the club. You know, like on tickets, whatever, easy. And that's ultimately where you've got to think about. You only need one person to become, you know, come back year after year after year to actually make stuff like that sustainable.
Something's just plucked in my head. Sorry, actually, James, there's a good example of this at Batley weekend just gone. For anybody who's been to Batley train station will know there's a massive piece of artwork in the train station of when they beat Widnes in the Northern Rail Cup. So if Batley had been able to do that, yeah, you think we'd be able to do something.
Yeah, and, you know, like I say, you know, I know we talked about the next game sign last week. You know, again, that's something where if you crowdfund it, it's not, yeah, you know, it might cost a couple of grand and it's up. But the idea is that the reason why that's going to be up is because that'll help generate more money moving forward as a legacy thing. It'll be there, you know, it'll be there forever and ever, amen, sort of thing. And I just think that's the way you've got to look at it. But, yeah, whether we get to that point, I do not know. The only other thing I wanted to mention was, I know someone asked about Joey Romeo. Is his name Joey Romeo?
Yes.
Who is the pacey back, outside back, fullback, who's at Whitehaven. He was previously at Swinton. I know Matt Shaw mentioned him when he was on the podcast not so long ago as a possible signing. My understanding is that he is someone of interest, but budget may well dictate whether he is a new signing or not. So yeah, I think Matt was going to check for us. I've not spoken to him actually, but I've made some other inquiries, and yeah, it's not a done thing, but he is someone who's of interest. So you can have that one.
Very versatile as well. He can play centre wing, fullback. Could be useful. Someone like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You'd have to be living under a rock not to know about Jake Mazin at the moment. I do find it interesting that Widnes don't announce these deals, you know, a bit earlier than they do. I know they tend to wait until after the season's finished, and, you know, they'll have their reasons for that, and hopefully at some point we'll get someone on from the club to explain. But I know Bradford are making a lot of signings at the moment, aren't they? And I suppose you can make the argument, well, actually, if you leave him till a bit later, it helps the season to get sales. But I suppose you sort of undo the impact of that when, realistically, when Widnes announced Jake Mazin in X months' time, everyone's going to be like, oh, we knew he was signing anyway.
Yeah, I think that's just the power of social media, isn't it? And obviously journalists out there and stuff. It's just the way of the modern world. I do agree when you see it, like, particularly Bradford. I think I'm a bit of an advocate of it being towards the end of the year. And I know what you're saying, like the Jake Mazin one example. But then you do sometimes get one or two, don't you? Like Liam Kirk, for example, last year. I mean, I don't know whether you knew, James, but I didn't see any articles getting wrote about that before that one was announced. So, yeah, I suppose from the club's perspective, maybe the ideas are that, you know, they can... You know, if somebody sees somebody pop up on the Facebook, you know, Widnes have signed X for next season, it may push a season ticket or two sales, you know, members Mondays, if they still want to call them that, you know, you can have a couple of guests up on stage and they can come and, you know, after just being announced in the week, I suppose it gives you options surrounding that to make a bit of extra cash. But Yeah. I suppose it's just the way of the modern world, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I'm not necessarily criticising for it. It's just, you know, if that's the way they want to do it, fine. But it's just interesting, isn't it, how different teams do it in different ways. Bradford, I'm not 100% sure. I still think there's some people at Bradford who think they're going to be in Super League next season, to be honest, which... Is almost certainly not going to be the case. But yeah, they seem to be spending a lot of money at the moment. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how the squad comes together. But for now, it's focusing on the last four games and starting with York on Sunday. Mike, thanks as always for your time. I hope everyone's enjoyed the listen as usual. Do reach out to us on Twitter or X, whatever they're calling it this week, at Widnes Rugby. Or me, I'm at JDG Sport. What are you, Mike? Mike Parsons 14, aren't you? Something like that. Yeah. Or the Widnes Rugby League fans group on Facebook. And we'll try and pick up your questions next week. But from this week, that's it from us for now.